The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good morning. So, this morning I'd like to talk about a concept that's very important in Buddhism and Buddhist practice, and that is the concept of skill. And skillfulness. And the word is, in Pali, is kusala, and it's the word that's used in the ancient language for having a skill in a craft or skill in a profession. People who were farmers or worked with wood or pottery, people who trained horses, and back then elephants, had a skill. And the reference point the Buddha used for how we practice Buddhism was that of developing a skill or having a skill. And those crafts were the representation of what if someone is doing, who's meditating or engaged in Buddhist practice, as opposed to using the reference point of a scholar, someone who studied, acquired lots of knowledge. The reference point is someone who's engaged in activity where we develop ourselves over time. And the idea that you can develop skills and have skillfulness is more important than knowledge, because you could know something, you could know a technique, you could know have understanding, but you can't apply it. You come up to a challenging life situation and you don't know what to do. Even if you're told a technique, in this situation do this, if you haven't developed a skill in doing it, you might not be able to kind of engage in it in a challenging time or at a time where it requires maybe a little bit of adjustment or something. And a lot of people in the West, I think, come to Buddhism looking for an experience. And they use experiences as the reference point for, a successful Buddhist practice. They use experience as a reference point for what they think it's about. And some people get calm, some people get a certain kind of nice experience, and then they think that experience is the thing. And so they have to kind of maintain that experience as they go about their world. And they lose that experience, they've lost, the grace of practice or something. But rather, the experiences are kind of ephemeral, they come and go. But if you can develop a skill, that skill is something that's kind of deeper than just learning a technique. It's something you've kind of mastered or become fluid in. And in that mastery or fluidity, then you can, that's portable. You can take it with you and can use it in all kinds of circumstances as it becomes important. One of the kind of very pithy presentations of the Buddha's teachings is a verse, a four-line verse, that goes like this. Avoid doing evil. Cultivate what is skillful. Purify the mind. This is the teaching of the Buddhas. Not just the Buddha, but all Buddhas. So avoid evil. Avoid doing evil. So engaging in things which cause harm. The word evil is we don't know if it's the best English translation of the word in Pali, the ancient English language. But we don't want to use the... Sometimes we don't translate words when they don't quite work well in English. But we don't want to translate this word. Keep the original, because it sounds like papa. they avoid, papa. But avoid doing evil, harm, in other words, causing harm. But then sometimes you see in English people translate the next line as do good, because that kind of comes off the tongue kind of easily and quickly, and cultivate skillful is a more complex idea. But doing good is just too vague. What does it mean to, what does good mean? And the word skill or skillful is a richer word and has something different kind of meaning. So the word skill or skillful has a number of different connotations. One is to have a proficiency in what you're doing. So you learn to do something, and you develop, you do it long enough and regularly enough that you develop proficiency and mastery, so you can do it with fluidity, with grace, with a naturalness, perhaps with maybe even a sense of unself-consciousness. And I think many of us find it quite inspiring sometimes, and captivating even, to watch someone do some work where they become a master of the activity. A master craftsperson, and if you see someone working with wood, or someone who's a cook, or someone who's a teacher, and they're doing something with great skill, and there's a kind of ease and wisdom and fluidity in how they do it, so, and it's kind of like their whole being can be in it in a kind of concentrated or full way, because they're not negotiating conflictive ways of being, their body is not kind of out of harmony, and like there's like a sense of harmony with what we do, and there's a real skill in the activity. So to develop skill is not just developing a technique, but it's developing a how we are, how we can engage in a way that is in and of itself meaningful. To have skill, to have skillfulness. And perhaps some of the qualities of being skillful are closely connected to qualities of freedom that we're looking for in Buddhism, and presence and focus and being concentrated and mindful. That when you really are skillful, you have to really have skill. You know how to apply your attention. You know how to let go of the things that get in the way. And you kind of enter into the world of what you're doing with a sense of freedom. Unself-conscious freedom. The idea of skillful has other connotations. One connotation has to do with the purpose for which you're doing it. Something is skillful. You can have a skill, which is something you can do good, well, but also you use something which is skillful, which is useful for some purpose. And so it requires some definition of why are we doing it? What purpose are we doing it? So Buddha said, cultivate what's skillful. And so there's two connotations of this word, skillful, and what is skillful. But before I give you those connotations, sometimes I like to translate the word kusala here, skillful, as helpful. And that captures, I think, better the sense that you can ask, helpful for what purpose? Skillful for what purpose? And helpful, I think, has, it feels to me at least, it has more universal positive associations. You do something that's helpful and just, oh yeah, that makes sense. You say, do something which is skillful, and you can be a skillful thief. and if the purpose is to, steal a lot. But a helpful thief, I don't think we would say that too often. So in the Buddhist connotation, then there's kind of two meanings of skillful, or context for using it. One is ethical. That we're using it to refer to those. So rather than using categories of good and bad, which are vague, or right and wrong, sinful or pure, the most common evaluation of ethics in Buddhism is it skillful? Is it skillful or helpful for the purposes of freeing people from suffering? Is it skillful or helpful to help people free them from the challenges they have to live a good life, to develop compassion, wellness, happiness? is the activity you're doing unskillful if it's causing harm to people? It's skillful if it causes benefit for people. So the activity itself is ethical partly out of what it causes, by the consequence that it has. So there's a richer connotation of ethics than the activity itself. The activity itself may or may not have helpful purpose in and of itself in the moment, but in the long term, it may have different consequences. So I learned this, unfortunately, hopefully quickly enough as a parent, where I found that when I was really challenged as a parent with challenging kids, I found that using a strong voice made a good effect in the moment. But to my horror, I discovered that it did not, the kids took it in and got this idea that this was okay behavior and started going around acting that way or being that way with others in a way. Said, uh-oh, that was not skillful. And so I think I better learn a different way of, you know, helping them be skillful. I thought I was being skillful once when my son was beginning to get under my skin, and so I looked at him and said, if you continue what you're doing, I'm going to get angry. So he stopped and cocked his head and looked at me in the eye and said, but Dad, you're already angry. So then I wasn't anymore. So that was skillful on his part. Asking the question is what I'm doing skillful? Is it beneficial? It's also a broader term than good and bad or right or wrong. Are the consequences of what I'm doing useful for everyone concerned? Are they beneficial? In what way are they useful and beneficial? In what way are they helpful for the situation? So that tends to be the ethical evaluation in Buddhism. The other thing is that it's used for practice itself. That Buddhist practice in and of itself, like meditation practice, is involved in a skill, and it's involved for a purpose. And this, so is it skillful for what we're trying to develop? So there are times, for example, when engaging in practice one way is skillful, but not in other times. And other times, maybe the opposite thing is helpful. So for example, if I'm basically relaxed and alert, if I start putting a lot of manual labor into meditation, really trying hard and straining to kind of be present, I kind of mess it up. I kind of agitate myself and I don't get settled anymore. But there are times when my mind is just wild, you know, out of control and spinning around in thoughts and ideas. And if I just kind of sit back and relax and just kind of like, you know, try to gently be there for it, you know, I'll be there for a long time spinning. And sometimes what's needed is to really apply myself in a strong, diligent way so that my kind of crazy mind doesn't have control of the situation, so I can kind of settle down. So different times, different things are skillful. When I'm tired, it might be skillful to do a walking meditation. When I'm maybe been very active and busy, maybe I need to sit down and meditate, partly kind of to let everything dissipate in the energy. So, you know, what is skillful, what is useful or helpful in a given situation is part of what Buddhist meditators or Buddhist practitioners learn to do over time. And to ask that question, given what the circumstances of now, what's happening now, what is useful, what is skillful, what's a skillful thing to do? What's the appropriate thing in this situation? So the appropriateness of how we respond, rather than coming with a, you know, policy, this is what we do. It's interesting that the word skill in Indo-European languages means to separate. In fact, in Norwegian, language I grew up with, that word is still connected to that because the way that English and Norwegian are connected, the word skille, same root as skill, literally means to separate, to distinguish. And so to be skillful has involved making distinctions, separations of things. So certainly between what is helpful and not helpful, but also to be able to distinguish and separate what kind of actions, activities, ways of being are really helpful for the task we're doing. So someone who's learning to swim, or someone who's developing skill in swimming, like an athlete, they do the same movements over and over and over again. And perhaps someone watching them doesn't see much difference from one week to the next. But slowly, because of the repetition of what they're doing, and their attention and their body kind of tuning in, they're making finer and finer distinctions, separations, so that their hand goes through the water in more efficient ways. And to become a great swimmer, the difference is parts of a second to win these races. So every little thing makes a difference. So learning to distinguish every little aspect of each stroke becomes part of the skill of being a great swimmer. Someone who has social skills learns to be able to read the situation well and to separate out what's going on with people's faces, their mood, their voices, their background, to be able to see what's going on in the situation, to be skillful, appropriate, to navigate, because it can make all these distinctions. If you don't separate out the details of what happens and you see, one big kind of vague kind of situation, you probably don't have much social skills, and probably we don't find our way through it. We don't understand why is it not going so smoothly for me. One of the skills that some people in America have to develop in order to get by, could be called the racial skills, so to understand how race works in America. And for a long time, it's the people who were oppressed by that who had to get really skilled and navigate white culture. And a little bit, I hope, it's beginning to open up the idea that people who are Caucasian in America should also learn something about being racial understanding and how these dynamics work in our society, rather than being oblivious to how it works, which is often the case. So there's kind of a wake-up that's coming on now in our culture. So certain kind of social skills, societal skills that we develop over time by making distinctions. And when to make distinctions, and when not, is part of the art of it all. So in meditation practice, which is kind of the center of gravity, a reference point for what we do here at IMC, it also involves skill, developing skills. And if you don't think that you're developing skills and you just practice every day, and you will. The repetition of doing anything, even if you're not paying careful attention, your whole system, your physical system, your breathing system, it begins to adjust based on what we do regularly. There's a kind of a physical learning that goes on. So one of the things I've seen in people who meditate regularly is their bodies begin to change. Their bodies settle in, adjust, and there's a kind of skillfulness in posture and how they sit, so that after a while they can sit comfortably for 45 minutes, they can do it comfortably maybe for on retreats for days on a time, because their body has kind of learned how to adjust. Not that the body is just stretched out, but they've learned how to pay attention to their posture and ways and what works for them, so they can settle down and relax and be here in a more full way. I think when I started meditating, I couldn't get my knees down to the floor. A lot of what I was negotiating was figuring out how to deal with the pain. And slowly over time, I learned better posture and what worked for me and how to settle in. So I became skilled in posture. But I didn't, no one told me that I was supposed to do that. It's just kind of like because of the repetition, that's what went on. Same thing with breathing as we sit down to meditate. If you're paying attention to breathing in meditation, your system is probably slowly learning a little bit about the distinctions between all the different ways you can breathe. And you might sit down, you realize after a while that what goes on with your belly when you breathe is consequential. And that, I've been meditating, after you sit meditate for 10 minutes, and after a while you're present enough, and notice I'm holding my belly. And so then maybe you relax the belly, and then the breathing goes smoother and easier. And there's a lot of little pieces of knowledge and understanding about breathing that come from just being in the breath over and over and over again. And you would think that it's, there's not much going on in breathing. You would think there's not much going on in the swimming stroke of a swimmer. But, you're making finer and finer distinctions. And some of that just comes from the repetition of doing it over and over and over again. Some of it might come from getting teachings on... So does it get kind of different? So the breathing, you know, you're getting skillful. We're getting skillful in how to breathe. And who would have thought that you're coming to meditation to have you develop this skill? So there's a number of skills that develop slowly over time in meditation. And as we learn them, it becomes easier and easier to meditate, for example, in situations that are quite challenging. There are times when our lives are, you know, great difficulty, emotional turmoil, challenges in our life. And because we've developed a skill, knowledge, understanding of what goes on for us, we know how to address, what to meet, what to be with, then we can navigate and find our way through these challenging times easier than if we have no skills at all. So I want to suggest to you that in meditation, there are, I'd like to suggest there's many, many skills that we develop. But I'd like to suggest 8. And it's a lot to remember. So you don't have to remember them all. Sometimes it's skillful just to remember those that are most impactful for you for now. But so there's 8 skills, and to help you remember, it has an acronym. And the acronym is rope hold. Rope hold. So rope hold, you know, hold on to the rope. If you have a rope hold, you can, you know, for safety. And so rope hold to reality. So the rope is relax, observe, posture, and equanimity. So there's skill in relaxing. Learning how to relax your body, learning how to relax your mind, can be quite difficult for some people. If you pick some people off the street and bring them to IMC and say, okay, sit down and relax, you know, some people are not going to know what to do. Or they might, you know, think that what that means is lay down and go to sleep. But if someone who's been meditating for a long time, you tell them to relax, they might actually sit up straighter first. Because there's a straight, upright posture that might allow them to kind of relax and soften their shoulders, their belly, different parts of the body. And more importantly, they recognize that, oh yeah, now that you tell me, there's a very subtle, or not so subtle, way in which I'm gripped around my brain, or my forehead, or my eyes. Oh, I can relax that as well. In fact, I think I can spend the next 10 minutes just going through and finding all the distinctions. Remember, a skill is making separations, distinctions, is all the thing, you know, all the different subtle ways in which I've been tense or holding, and someone who's never meditated before have no idea that there's, you know, 100 little points in the body that could soften and relax. But anyway, so do some modicum, some beginning of relaxing is very, that skill of relaxation is really helpful to develop that. The second is a skill of observation or mindfulness. The ability to observe what's happening rather than being caught up in what's happening, rather than being involved with what's happening. So if your mind is thinking a lot, to step back and observe the fact that you're thinking. So the energy, your energy goes into the observation, your energy doesn't go into thinking better, you know, or thinking more, thinking about it. Step back and take a look, oh, that's there, I'm thinking. Or if there's strong emotions, to observe it, rather than being pushed around or being caught in the winds of the emotion, the swirls of the emotion. It's the ability to watch, to be mindful. If there's a lot of discomfort in the body, to learn to observe it as opposed to reacting to it is important. So it's the ability to value the observational capacity of the mind, the mind's ability to be mindful or be aware. And then connected to that, closely connected to that, there's the idea of equanimity, non-reactivity, the idea of being equanimous, not being before or against the experience as we're observing it. You might be for and against it for other reasons, but to have this ability to observe, to be present in an equanimous way, a non-reactive way, not being frazzled by it, not getting agitated by it, not getting resistant to it, not getting close to it, but develop a skill in equanimity. And that's a skill that takes some wisdom to know when it's useful, appropriate to be equanimous, in what way is equanimity wise, and which ways is it not wise. But that also takes a lot of familiarity. And meditation practice is the laboratory for familiarity. We come back and over and over and over again to the simple act of sitting down to meditate, being maybe with the breathing, with our body, being present here. And over time, we're beginning to see more and more clearly what is happening here, what's going on inside of us. And we're making clearer and clearer distinctions that help us become skillful and fluid and proficient, kind of a certain mastery over ourselves because we understand and see. But it takes a lot of repetition, just like the swimmer. It takes lots and lots of repetition to begin seeing what's really going on in a deep way, or for the psychophysical system to begin tuning in and kind of making those small little adjustments that involve skillfulness. So that's the rope. So relax, observe, posture, have a good posture. Focus on your posture and develop, the skill in posture, and then equanimity. I guess when I went through it, I skipped the posture part, but I said it talked about earlier. So relax, observe, posture, and equanimity, and then the hold. So the maybe it's not the best word, but it kind of works with the H. I mean, the concept is the right concept here, but. But the word is happy. And happy maybe seems like, a little bit, I like the word well-being. It's more general. But the idea is to cultivate a sense of happiness, to be skillful about what helps you have a sense of well-being. Don't just kind of sit around and wait to be happy. Don't wait some circumstances to make you happy or other people to make you happy. But begin to be wise about what makes you happy. What are the conditions? What are the situations that brings a sense of well-being? In simple ways, what are the attitudes that you can have as you go through your life? There are attitudes that promote well-being and happiness. What are the thoughts that you can have? What are the activities you do that can bring you a sense of well-being and happiness? Maybe in small ways. I did not have, I was a whole huge collection, huge number of human life skills that I did not, I only realized I didn't have until I became a parent. And so what occurs to me now is in terms of what made me happy and relaxed was, there was a time in my life before I was a parent that I liked getting up in the morning and having breakfast and reading the newspaper. It was something very comforting and nice kind of to be there, read the newspaper. And so I happily continued, or thought I was happily continuing to do that when I was trying to, I had kids that had to go to school, to nursery school and preschool and kindergarten. And so I was still doing my old ritual. And eventually I discovered that I had to let go of it. Because it produced a certain amount of stress, being hurried to try to kind of do the reading of newspaper and then get the kids ready for school and out the door in the last possible minute. And the whole thing went smoother. I started the day with a greater sense of well-being if I didn't read the newspaper and had a little more time and relaxed and got the kids out. It turns out that getting the kids out to school is as rich of a Buddhist practice as getting up early in the monastery to chant the sutras, what they do, whatever they do in the monastery. It's like, it's like a great, it took skill, it took understanding, it to understand what helps me be happy and sense of well-being for me and everyone else. So this idea of happy, to use that as a reference point, sense of well-being, and develop skill in that, self-understanding in that. So when you sit down to meditate, What brings you a sense of well-being when you sit down to meditate? Is there some understanding about the value of being present, the value of being settled, the value of closing your eyes and being connected here? That, you know, so when you sit down, you associate it with this thing that's, it's a happiness producing, it's inspiring to do it because you know it has value. The other, so that's the H, and then O is openness, to be open to what's happening, to not resist. And there's a kind of wonderful practice of saying yes to what's happening. Not yes as if you condone it or you believe it's right or it should be there, but it means don't resist, rather kind of like you almost like you spread your arms wide and say, here I am, I'm going to get to know this. I'm going to get to know it better. I'm going to be here for it. And even if it's something which is not healthy or appropriate to do, but to step forward towards it in meditation, okay, let me be here for a moment. That's the attitude of openness. And with the openness, then I can figure out what to do if I have to change it in some way. But to cultivate openness is a wonderful thing because a lot of the things we have to do to change and adjust things in life or even in meditation, if they need to be, can be done with a sense of openness. We don't have to close and be resistant to institute change in our lives. So to cultivate a skill in being open is one of the great skills. And then the L is let go. That also is a skill. I've talked to people who hear these Buddhists talk about letting go, and they say, I have no clue what you mean. And you know, it's a little bit my kind of maybe example of how I kind of been in it for so long that I forget that when you're new, it like doesn't make sense. It doesn't there's no understanding of what that means. But over time, over these years that I've been practicing, the idea of letting go has become quite a skill, something I can do relatively easily in most circumstances. So let go of my attachments, my holding, what I'm caught in, and oh. In fact, so well sometimes that I've learned that I should. Sometimes it's actually useful not to let go. And I've had to learn the skill of holding on, partly for the purposes of seeing more clearly what's going on, understanding. But there's a skill in letting go that's very useful to develop. And life is so much more fluid, more relaxed. It's easier to go through life more wisely if we know how to let go rather than hold on. And then the D of hold is do. And I don't want to use the word exactly doing, but doing. The activity, engagement. So coming out of meditation, coming out of being relaxed, developing observational powers, developing a good sense of being physically present with your body, your posture, being equanimous, sense of well-being, sense of openness, having let go. Now, bring that into your life and engage, act in the world and see if you can take these skills and see if they can continue or apply them or use them in your daily life. What you learn in meditation is a reference point for what's possible in ordinary life, daily life. Because meditation is part of daily life. It's not like some radically different way of being. It's you have the same mind, the same heart, the same body. It's still you. And so it's kind of arbitrary, the line between meditation and not meditation. So as you learn in meditation, a certain way of being, develop skillfulness, then how can you use those skills in daily life as well? How can you apply them and find them and develop them? And there also, it's a matter of repetition. It's a matter of developing the skills. And some people can get very skilled in meditation to get to relaxed, present, happy, sense of well-being, sense of freedom. But they don't know how to do that in daily life. And some people I've known are just find themselves, they leave a retreat, and they're just kind of like everything kind of falls apart for them, and it's very difficult. But to remember always, if you're going to be do Buddhist meditation, do meditation, you get so much more out of it if when you finish your meditation, you don't just pop up and you know, forget that you ever meditated and just kind of race into the next thing. But you reflect and consider, how can you develop some of this goodness, some of this sense of well-being, some of the benefits, some of the skills of meditation? How can you bring those skills, how can you develop those skills in daily life? And if you develop these eight skills, the rope hold, then it is not just having the skills that are useful to get to accomplish things in the world. It turns out that becoming skillful, having these skills, brings along with it, as a kind of, I don't know if byproduct's the right word, brings along a sense of freedom, a sense of confidence, a sense of purpose in life. Because there's a goodness, there's a wholesomeness, there's a certain kind of beneficial quality that comes just from simply having these skills and being able to apply them, independent of, you know, the where you apply them, when you apply them. And one of the great things it brings is a sense of confidence, that we have confidence we can engage in what's happening in the world, we can engage in many circumstances, and we have the skills, the skill sets, in order to find our way through it. And it's a confidence that comes slowly and builds over time by developing skills, the slow developing of skills that comes from repetition, engaging over and over. And finally, I think there's something very mature or wise about developing skill and skillfulness, because it doesn't involve magical thinking. It does involve a slow, gradual process of learning, which is often how people learn in the most stable way, kind of slow changing of who we are. And if this idea of developing skills and being skillful feels like it now, it's too much work, it's too much activity. You know, I'm so busy with my life as it is, and now I have to do this too. You know, now I'm really going to be stressed out. The evaluation of things, whether it's skillful or unskillful, one of the skills we want to develop is to know what's the appropriate medicine, what's the appropriate way of being, given how we are. And it's possible that if you're really busy and active and stressed, that what's skillful, the skill you need to develop, is relaxation. So not doing Buddhist meditation as one more thing to do, but rather it's at one place where you come where you don't do. And for a while, the skill of not doing and just letting things unwind, and that's what's most useful. And so this navigation, this negotiation, finding our way, how much do we relax and settle and do less? What do we do that's useful and engaging and supports us? That's part of the art of being skillful and finding our way, and to do it in a way that is supportive, nourishing, helpful, is part of the art of this practice. So skillfulness, to develop a skill. And whether you like this idea or not, if you meditate every day on a regular basis, you'll develop skills and skillfulness around it, even if you don't want it. Almost anything you do regularly, you'll kind of, your system will pick up and understand better and better how to do it in ways that are, you know, feel good and helpful. So avoid doing evil, cultivate what is skillful, and purify the mind. This is the teachings of the Buddha. And this is the third line, purify the mind, free the mind, is often the ultimate kind of criteria for knowing what's skillful for ourselves personally. Okay, thank you all.